Welcome to Madrid en Inglés, Madrid in English, a tour, a colorful educational tour of our capital, Madrid, and of our province, La Comunidad de Madrid. Learn English with me, with Richard Vaughn, using Madrid as our base of operations. Yeah, let's go. Hello and good morning. How are you today? Welcome. Today is Sunday, as usual. Yes. Why do I know that today is Sunday? Because it's the only day that I have a radio show on Onda Madrid. So welcome to Madrid en Inglés with Richard Vaughn. Ese soy yo. Richard Vaughn, or Richard Vaughan, as people often say. And welcome. It's Sunday morning. It's Sunday morning. This is the last holiday. Tomorrow is Monday. And tomorrow's not a holiday, so we have to work. Okay, but in any case, it's still the morning, so we have practically the whole day ahead of us. El día entero por delante. El día entero por delante. The whole day ahead of us. So there's every reason in the world to be happy, optimistic, and to look forward to take advantage of today, starting now, starting right now with English. Madrid en Inglés, Madrid in English. That's my job. I'm an English teacher. But on this program with Onda Madrid, my way of teaching is indirect because I'm not teaching grammar, I'm not teaching vocabulary, and I'm not teaching phonetics or pronunciation. I'm simply talking in English and sometimes in Spanish. But I'm talking about Madrid, the city of Madrid and the province of Madrid. Yes, and I'm using my lifeline, Línea Vital, lifeline. Yes, I came to Madrid for the first time in August 1972. I spent one academic year as a student. Then I went back and finished my degree at the University of Texas, and then I returned to Madrid in 1974, and I have been living in Madrid since then. Now, I'm using my life in Madrid as a base of operations, let's say, to talk about the city. But I'm talking about the city with a timeline as well, based on my life in the city. And I started last October. At the beginning of October, I think it was October 6th. I don't remember the exact date. The first Sunday in October, I think. And I started, of course, with 1972 when I came as a student. But now we're in February, and I'm in 1979, which means I'm going very slowly. I'm going very, very slowly, but it doesn't matter. Da lo mismo, da igual, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It doesn't make any difference. Dos formas de decir lo mismo. Da igual es lo mismo. Oh, es indiferente, como dicen algunos. It doesn't matter. It doesn't make any difference. I don't care, because my objective is to expose you to English. My objective is not to talk about myself or to talk about Madrid, but in talking about myself and about Madrid, it's easy for me to speak to you in English for 500 hours if necessary. And that's what I'm going, that's what I'm doing. Madrid, now, I finished my last segment with buying a car, a 5200, getting married to Fernanda. And I'm still married to Fernanda, by the way. Continuing to teach in John Deere Iberica in Getafe, and with new clients, three new clients during 1979, which were Ericsson, the Swedish telecommunications company, located at that time in the Polígono Industrial de Leganés, an enormous facility. Sitio Facility para Instalaciones, an enormous facility. Intelsa was the name of the company then, Industrias de Telecomunicación S.A., a joint venture between Telefónica and Ericsson. Later, Ericsson bought out Telefónica's share. And Amper, which was an important Spanish electronics firm, Amper, viene la prueba, creo que Antonio Peral. Amper, o Antonio Pérez. But I think it's Antonio Peral, o Perales. I think. You know, I don't know. I don't know what the original, I can find out. It's an important Spanish company, Amper, Empresa. I can find some information on it. Amper, let's see. Here I have Amper, Grupo Empresarial España, pop, 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 pop. Okay. Antonio Peral Hernández. Okay, yes. Las actividades de Amper se iniciaron. Let me find it in English, if I can. Nope, no viene en English. Se iniciaron en el año 56. Antonio Peral Hernández, doctor ingeniero de telecomunicaciones. Okay. Fundó en ese año junto a su esposa, etc. Amper. Very good company, by the way. It has had a lot of different chairmen and general managers. And sometimes it was under the influence of the socialist, the PSOE, the Socialist Party. But in general, it's a very good company. Yes, I have it was a client of mine for many, many, many years, maybe 30 years, like John Deere and Ericsson, all of these companies, because I give good service. I give quality service, and so my client companies stay with me year after year after year. And then finally, Laboratorios Beecham, which now is part of SmithKline, GlaxoSmithKline, GSK, pharmaceutical company, Big Pharma, very important company. And at that time, Laboratorios Beecham in 1978, 1979, was people, probably if you remember, there was an antibiotic called Britapen that everybody took. And that was from Beecham Laboratories. And those were my three new clients, in addition to John Deere. So by the end of 1979, at the beginning of the 1980s, I had four very good companies. And that was the beginning of my embryonic empire, creating an empire in English teaching. At that time, I was living with my wife in Virgen del Val, in a rented flat in Virgen del Val, yes, street in the Barrio Concepción. Before that, after we got married at the end of 1977, we lived for 1 year only on the Calle de los Dos Amigos, exactly behind Edificio España de la Plaza de España, justo detrás. There's a little street, a tiny street called Calle de los Dos Amigos. There we lived for 1 year, and then we moved to a flat in Barrio Concepción, Virgen del Val Street, we rented. And later, in 1984, we were renting a flat on the first floor, and we bought a flat on the third floor. Yes, which I still own, by the way, for four million pesetas, I remember. 4 million pesetas in 1984. How much is 4 million pesetas in euros divided by 186. I can't remember. 166. There we go. Divided by 166. Me ha salido mal. Let me try one more time. Okay. 4 million euros. I bought a flat in Virgen del Val Street in Barrio Concepción for 4 million euros. Excuse me. 4 million pesetas. ¿Qué digo yo? Euros. Divided by 166. So it was 24,000 euros. Wow. That flat today, and I still own it. My daughter lives there. That flat today is worth probably 300,000, maybe 350,000. Prices are going up in Madrid. There's a demand because so many people are coming to Madrid, and some people with money are coming. Madrid is becoming a very popular city now. In fact, it's in fashion. Madrid está de moda, mundialmente. People, it's an attractive city. Yes, it has displaced Barcelona as the most attractive, or, well, and together with Malaga and Valencia. All of the cities in Spain are very interesting cities. I love Barcelona. I like Madrid more, but I like Barcelona very much. I like Malaga. I think Valencia is fantastic. I like Bilbao. Bilbao has been cleaned up and improved, and now it's a really attractive city. And I like Vigo. I like Coruña. I like Santander. I like all of the cities on the coast, Gijón. And then Alicante I like very much. Even Tarragona and Castellón. So Spain is a very interesting country. And Madrid is a very interesting city. It's a very livable city. But in any case, I'm going off on a tangent. So in 1984, I'm getting ahead of myself. Me estoy adelantando a mí mismo. 1984, no, I don't want to talk about 1984, but in 1979, 1980, my wife and I were living on Virgen del Val Street in Barrio La Concepción. Yes. Before that, in Spain, I had lived in many different places. When I came to Spain, the first time I came to Spain, I lived on Rosales, Pintor Rosales, for 4 months. Then after that, I lived for 1 month on Calle de los Astros in a rented room in Barrio Estrella. And then I lived in a rented room on Doctor Izquierdo, very near Conde Casal. And then I went back to the States. And then I came back and lived in La Pensión Gracia, the Gracia de Triana, La Cantadora Sevillana, on Calle de la Luna for 2 weeks. And then I'm trying to remember. Then I lived I lived on Fuencarral, very near Glorieta Bilbao, in Frente de los Cines. Okay. And then that's five. And then after that, I lived in Almonacid de Zorita, in the province of Guadalajara. Then I lived in La Central Nuclear Misma de Guadalajara, de Zorita. That's seven. And then I came back to Madrid and lived again in Calle Los Astros in the same house with a rented room for 1 month. And then I lived on Calle Princesa number 8 opposite the Plaza de Los Cubos, number 9, that's 9. Then I lived for about 7 months in the Meliá Princesa arriba, very high, in a beautiful apartment, that's 10. And then I lived in Calle Los Dos Amigos, that's 11. And finally, in 1980, or late 1979, 1980, in the Barrio Concepción, Calle Virgen del Val, first floor. That's 12 houses, or 12 different places I lived between 1972 and 1980. And if I include that 1 year back in Austin, Texas, to finish my degree, there are 3 different places, so that's 15. And then in 1974, I bought a flat, my first flat. Now, in 1979, was an important year, and 1980 was a very important year. My daughter was born in 1980, so my wife was pregnant in the last part, the last months of 1979, and 1980 up to mid-July. My daughter Andrea was born on July 15th, 1980, and so it was a good year. It was a good year for my work. I was very, very busy. Living in a little flat, 92 square meters in Barrio Concepción, and there in a corner of my bedroom, I had an electronic typewriter with a memory, a printer, and a telephone, landline telephone, of course. Landline means teléfono fijo, línea terrestre, decimos en inglés, landline telephone. Because at that time, of course, we didn't have mobile telephones. And from there, from that little corner in my bedroom, I managed up to 30 teachers, 30 to 40 teachers. Yes, sir, because I stayed using that bedroom. Well, I moved it upstairs to the third floor when I bought that flat. But until 1986. I was operating from my house, my business, with computer, printer, and landline telephone. And I was able to manage up to 40 teachers. So I was busy. But I didn't need to have an office. So I was keeping my fixed expenses to an absolute minimum. But in any case, what was important in 1980, 1979, 1980? What was important? I don't know. Well, how many people were there in the community of Madrid? In the community of Madrid in 1980? Well, let's see. I have a list in front of me. There were 4.6 million people in La Provincia, in the community of Madrid. 4.6 million. Yes. 1 year, 10 years before, in 1970, there were 3.8. So, during the 1970s, the population of the Comunidad de Madrid grew 24%. In the 1960s, from 1960 to 1970, it grew 45%. Many people were coming in from Toledo, from Extremadura, from Andalusia, from Castilla la Vieja y Castilla la Nueva. And a lot of people were coming to live in Madrid. There was a big change. A lot of Spanish people were going to Germany, Switzerland, France, the Netherlands, Belgium, Great Britain to work. They were sending back money. And a lot of tourists were starting to come to Spain, the boom of the 1960s in Spain. But in any case, now the population of the Community of Madrid is close to 7 million. Yes. In 2021, 3 years ago, or 4 years ago, it was 6.7 million. So it's growing. As I said, Madrid is very popular. I think the two most popular cities today in Spain that are really in fashion are Madrid and Malaga. Although it is true that about 2 years ago, I saw an article in an American magazine that had a ranking of the best cities in the world in terms of quality of life. And number one was Valencia. I was surprised. Well, I'm not surprised. Valencia is a very high-quality city. But I was surprised. And in the top 10 was both Madrid and Barcelona. So three Spanish cities in the top 10, according to that magazine, of course. But that was the population, yes, the population of Madrid. And in 1980, the year I'm talking to you about, is a little less than 5 million people. 5 million people. But in any case, it was a good year. Every year has been good for me. Always. The years are good. I mean, what was important in Madrid in 1979, 1980? Well, in 1979, Tierno Galván was elected president of the Comunidad de Madrid. He was elected president of the Madrid region. Yes. He originally was the leader of the PC. Not the PC. That's the Partido Comunista de España. It was PSA. Partido Socialista. I can't remember. Because there were two parties. Felipe González and Alfonso Guerra were leading the PSOE, Partido Socialista Obrero Español, and Partido Socialista Español. I can't. Oh, no, PSP, Partido Socialista Popular. I remember. Tierno Galván was the head of that. And during this, just before this, maybe in 78 or 79, they joined. And they merged into one party. And in April 1979, the city of Madrid... No, the community of Madrid, held its first democratic municipal elections after the death of Franco. Yes. And Tierno Galván was elected mayor. The UCD, you remember the Unión del Centro Democrático of Adolfo Suárez, secured 25 seats, and so did the PSOE, the Spanish Socialist Workers' Party. But the socialists received support from the Communist Party. And that helped Tirnagalvan become the mayor. All right. In April 1979. But I'm running out of time for this first segment of my program. We're going to take a very short break. And I'll be back in just a few minutes, which means stay close to the dial. I have a lot to talk about today. Mucho de que hablar. I have a lot to talk about today. And I'll be right back.
Porque los toros son cultura, son arte, son espectáculo.
Los domingos de 11 a 12 de la noche, El Toril con Julio Martínez, en Onda Madrid.
Plántale cara a la inflación en Invermoneda, la tienda online de metales preciosos de inversión de referencia. Lingotes y monedas de las mejores casas de la moneda y refinerías más prestigiosas en Invermoneda.com. Sácale el máximo provecho al valor refugio del oro y la plata y protege tu futuro. Invermoneda.com, tu tienda online de metales preciosos de confianza y el mayor aliado de tus ahorros.
101.3 y 106 FM, Onda Madrid.
Hello and welcome back. Okay, I was talking about Tirnagalvan, who became the first president of the Comunidad de Madrid, the first president of this region in 1979. That's one important thing that happened. Another in the late was the La Movida Madrileña. Do you remember? Yes, the countercultural movement started to gain momentum in the late 70s, but especially during the 80s. Punk rock, synth pop music. Yes, yeah, there was a lot of liberalization. Yes, earlier in the mid-70s, you had the Momento de Destape. You remember these things. It was different. The Madrid, there was a type of redefinition of the Madrid cultural identity during the transition. For better or for worse, what else was happening? We had Manolo Orantes was considered the best tennis player. He won the U.S. Open in 1975. And probably Jose Higuera se llamó. What was his name? I can't remember. I think it was, Jose Higueras. He was very good at that time. He was a very he didn't win any of the majors. That means the Grand Slam, the U.S. Open, the French Open or Roland Garros or the Australian Open or the Wimbledon title. But he, I think he reached the semifinals at the French Open. I think maybe 79 or 1980, I don't remember. Angel Jimenez, there were some good players. But of course, the number one sport was football. What happened in football? Well, I don't know. The Copa del Rey. Who won the Copa del Rey? The final. Yes. Well, Real Madrid faced Castilla, you remember. It was a strange. Yeah, you know, Castilla, Club de Football, was the second team of the Real Madrid club, the group. And it was a strange year, that year, 1917, well, the season, 1979-1980. Castilla defeated many very important teams like, I think, Athletic de Bilbao and maybe, I can't remember what other teams. Well, maybe even Atletico de Madrid, I don't remember. And it was strange because the final in the Copa del Rey was between Real Madrid y su equipo B, Castilla. And Real Madrid defeated them 6-1. It was interesting. The league that year, Real Madrid finished, it clinched or won its 20th league title. Yes. Yes. Always prominent in football. But who are the big players? Well, you remember Juanito, of course. Juanito was the favorite of many of the fans because of his skill, his passion, let's say, and his dribbling ability. I was never convinced personally about Juanito. I saw a few moments of surprise, but usually not. Juanito. He originally played for Burgos, and then he came to Real Madrid. And of course, we had Santillana, the famous prolific striker Santillana, his aerial ability to head the goals, his instinct. Tenía instinto, tenía olfato de gol. I mean, he could smell the goal, right? And he was always... Oh, also, we had... Vicente del Bosque was playing at that time. He was the central midfielder. Yes. Of course, later he became the manager. And of course, later he was the coach of the World Cup winning team in 2010. I know Vicente personally. He's a wonderful man. Very, very extremely pleasant man. Very nice. You know, it's interesting about Vicente del Bosque. I met him, I think maybe 10 years ago. I was on a train returning to Madrid, I think from Valencia on the AVE. And when we arrived in the Atocha station, returning from at night, de noche, yeah, I was sitting in the train car and I got up. And there were a lot of people in front of me, leaving. And I noticed maybe 20 people ahead of me, Vicente del Bosque, because he's quite tall. It's easy to see him. But for some reason, he saw me. And he stopped in the section of the train where you get off. And he waited for me as other people were leaving. And he introduced himself. He waited for me. And I... So apparently he recognized me from radio or television, and he had the courtesy and the good manners to wait, and he introduced, well, he didn't need to introduce himself. He said, I just said, hola Vicente, ¿cómo estás? Of course. And he said, ¿cómo estás, Richard? And so from the train, we walked together because to reach the street in the Atocha station from the AVE, you need to walk for about 400 meters. It's a long walk. And we spent that time talking along the way, chatting. But he had the gentileza, you would say in Spanish. He had the good manners of waiting. When he recognized me, he waited so that we could meet formally and chat on the way out. Later, I met him again. And in a meeting we had with other people. And I arrived early. It was in the lobby of an important hotel. We were going to have a coffee in the hotel lounge. And I got there about 15 minutes early. And he was there. He was sitting there. So he got there even before I did. And I went and reintroduced myself, and he remembered from our maybe 5 or 6 years before. And we spent 20 minutes, because the other people arrived late, 20 or 25 minutes chatting. And I asked him about his background, his childhood in the province of Salamanca and his beginnings there. Very interesting man. In 1979, 1980, he was the midfielder. And you may remember Camacho as well. You remember Camacho, who was a tenacious defense? I think it was lateral izquierdo, I think was his position. And then we had Uli Stielicki. You remember Stielicki? A German midfielder and defender. He was good. He was very, very good. Yes. A very hard-working player. Very consistent player. And later later in 1982, when the World Cup came to Madrid, he was a member of the German team. And I remember when Germany defeated France in the semifinals, I believe, of the World Cup. Yeah. Yes, the semifinals. Germany defeated France, but I think it was with penalty kicks at the end. And I believe Stielicki missed. Fayo. I think he missed. I don't know. Yeah, I can't remember. But in any case, maybe you can remember. That was Real Madrid. And Atletico at that time? Oh, I can't remember. Schuster In 1980, he joined. You know, Bernd Schuster, the German midfielder, played for Barcelona first and then Real Madrid and then Atletico. Yes. He's maybe the only player to play for all three of the major teams in Spain. But they had Dirceu. You remember Dirceu, the Brazilian midfielder? Then they had Rubén Ayala, El Raton, Marcos Alonso. Interesting teams, interesting leagues. In basketball, I don't remember. Romay, Ruyan. I think Corbalan was still playing. But I don't remember if Luik and Brabander, I don't think they were playing for Real Madrid at that time. I met Clifford Luik in the United States many years later, in 1991 or 92. He and his wife and his family. But in any case, that is a little bit about 1979-1980. What was going on. And for me, well, as I said, I was busy creating a business. And I was living in Virgen del Val. That's Barrio Concepción. That area, those houses were built by, I can't remember the name of the builder, but he has, he has a very important sports or marina. Marina es Puerto Deportivo. Near Malaga, near Marbella, and I can't remember the name of it. But that area, Barrio Concepción, was originally built for the textile industry. At that time, you remember during the Franco regime, you had los sindicatos verticales. So, which means trade union activity was basically prohibited, banned during the Franco regime. But they had some type of system called sindicatos verticales of different gremios, and one was el textil. And they had a lot of money and enough money to finance the construction and housing for people who were working in la industria del textil, textile industry. And that was the basis of the creation of Barrio Concepción. And starting in 1980, I lived in that neighborhood until 1998. So I lived there for 18 years, first in a rented flat on the first floor, and then I bought a third floor flat in the same building. And so it was very easy to park in that area. And that area was still relatively undeveloped. When we first started living there, it was there were still gypsies living there, and there were still casi cuevas and things. But it changed very, very quickly. It changed. Telefónica built a very big switching center, Central de Conmutación. And then they built the La Mezquita de la Metreinta, and then the Tanatorio de la Metreinta, and then other things. But it was an interesting, it was okay. And they had the Parque Calero there, along Virgen del Val on one side and José del Hierro on the other. And of course, it was near Arturo Soria and also the Polígono, Polideportivo de la Concepción. So it was a relatively nice area. But I was too busy working. I was very, very busy in 1979 and 1980 working. And so, and Madrid was growing. And Madrid as a city and Madrid as a province was growing. Today, as I said, the exact population is of the community of Madrid, but it's pretty big. The biggest city, of course, is Madrid. Madrid. The population in 2022, that's 2.5 years ago, or 2 years ago, really. The population, although I'm speaking to you now in February 2025, the population figures for the end of 2022, so it's basically 2 years and 2 months ago. The population in Madrid was 3.3 million. The second biggest city in the province of Madrid is Móstoles, with 209,000. The third is Alcalá de Henares with 197,000. The fourth is Fuenlabrada with 190,000. And the fifth is Leganés. But it's interesting. Móstoles, Alcalá de Henares, Fuenlabrada, Leganés, and Getafe, and Alcorcón. These cities have more, all of them have more than 170,000 people. So those are what we call bedroom communities. In Spanish, you say ciudades dormitorio. And we use the verb to commute, conmutar, o sea, literalmente. Commute, doble M. Escrito commute, commute means hacer el viaje al trabajo todas las mañanas is the commute. Y el regreso por la tarde is the commute. A commuter no es un conmutador. A commuter in English is un, I don't know, how do you say commuter? Let me look it up. Commuter. I'm going to look it up in word reference. Commuter. Commuter. Dice trabajador pendular. No, no. Persona que viaja a diario entre su hogar y el trabajo. Okay. So there isn't a word in English for commuter. But to commute is, for example, a commuter train is tren de cercanías and things. But to commute. So those are the most important bedroom communities. But I need to take another break. My God. Se me acaba el tiempo. I'll be right back.
Revive la emoción de la competición en Onda Madrid, donde cada domingo se apagan las luces del semáforo para trasladarnos todo lo sucedido en el Mundial de Fórmula 1.
MotoGP, rallies y Mundo Motorsport. La mejor fórmula para estar al tanto de todas las carreras, la previa, entrevistas y las curiosidades.
Una cita ineludible para amantes de la competición, donde periodistas, ingenieros y pilotos analizan en un mismo box toda la actualidad.
Te esperamos cada domingo de 12 a 2 de la madrugada con Juanma Fernández y todo su equipo.
Para que esté siempre en la pole position de la información del motor de competición.
Aquí, en Onda Madrid.
Restaurante J, cocina vasca, un referente de buena mesa en Chamberí, con la sencillez y honestidad de la cocina de siempre, donde comer bien, sin tontunas, con familia, amigos, tu cuadrilla, verduras, guisos de temporada y pescados salvajes al centro de la mesa. Restaurante J, una cocina para siempre, a 50 metros de la Glorieta de Bilbao. Reserva y disfruta.
101.3 y 106 FM, Onda Madrid.
Hello and welcome back. All right. Just before the break, I was talking about the six or seven most important cities in the community of Madrid, in addition to Madrid. Madrid, of course, is by far, clearly, the largest city in Madrid, in the province of Madrid. But Móstoles is the second. Móstoles, Alcalá de Henares, Fuenlabrada, Leganés, and Getafe, and Alcorcón. That's, and then after that, it goes down to 130,000 with Torrejón de Ardoz, Parla, Alcobendas, Rivas, Vacia Madrid, Las Rozas, etc., etc. Yes, the smallest, the smallest municipality in the community of Madrid is La Acebeda in Sierra Norte. Population, 62 people. Y lo conozco. I've been to La Acebeda. I went to La Acebeda probably in 1998 or 1999, and spent the night there hotel de campo. Yes, one of these things. And so there are a lot of very small towns up in La Sierra, El Pueblo, La Puebla de la Sierra, La Iruela, Robre Gordo. All right, we have a lot of these things. But La Acebeda is the smallest, only 62 people. Now, which one is the highest in elevation? The highest in elevation? I don't know. We can find out. We can find the highest elevation is Somosierra. El pueblo de Somosierra, the village of Somosierra, is 1,434 meters above sea level. All right. And La Cebeda, where I stayed one night, is 1,200. All right. Spain is the second highest country in Europe after Switzerland. The average elevation in Spain is very high because Spain has a lot of mountains. It has the Central Massif, which is Gredos and Guadarrama. And this, of course, it has the Cantabrian range in the Cornisa Cantabrica, all the, from the Basque Country to Galicia, including, of course, the Picos de Europa. And then it has, of course, the Pyrenees. Then it has the Sierra Morena. It has the Sierra Nevada and the Alpujarras. And it has the Serranía de Ronda. And it has, I'm forgetting something. It has El Moncayo in Aragon next to, I can't remember the name of the town. But, and of course it has the Sierras. Everywhere. There are mountains everywhere in Spain. Spain is a very difficult country. It's a very expensive country for building roads and rail networks. You know, people in Spain, traditionally, historically, there has always been a lot of complaints that Spain didn't develop as quickly as Germany, France, Great Britain, etc. Well, one of the most important reasons was because of the geography, what you call in Spanish an orografía, the orography, the topography. To build 1 kilometer of highway, carretera, or railway, ferrocarril, is about 6 or 7 times more expensive than in France. The average cost, simply because you need you have to cross through so many mountains. You need viaductos y túneles. You need tunnels and viaducts. Tunnels and viaducts. In France, very few. In Germany, very few. In Great Britain, very few, you see. And so Spain is a rough, tough, aggressed type of geography, which is very interesting. I like it very much. And it's interesting. It's a masculine country. España es un país masculino en algún sentido. Let me explain. Ernest Hemingway, the American writer, was the type of... he was a bit of a macho man. Tenía un carácter un poco macho. Yo soy macho. He was that. Ernest Hemingway was very masculine. But he was a brilliant writer, a very intelligent man. And his first contact with Europe was during the First World War. He was an ambulance driver in the north of Italy, in the Dolomitas in esa zona, during the First World War, when the Italians were fighting against the Germans and the Austrians in the Eastern Alps of Italy. But after that, after the war, he went to Paris. And he joined other American writers. There was a colony of American writers and poets and artists called the Lost Generation, la generación perdida, the Lost Generation. And there you had also Pablo Picasso, George Braque, Juan Gris, and other important, Henry Miller, other important, interesting figures in Paris during the 1920s. And he was invited to travel down to Pamplona for the La Feria, for the, what do you call it, La Pamplona, for the annual fair in Las, what do you call it? I'm forgetting, La Feria de Pamplona, I'm forgetting. Yeah, La Feria de Pamplona, I can't remember the name. I'm losing... Yes, San Fermín, of course, Los San Fermines. So he was invited. I'm getting too old. Maybe I shouldn't do this radio show. But he was invited by to go down by train to Pamplona. And so he went down, and he crossed the border through the area of Bidasoa, that the northern part of the region of Pamplona, la Comunidad Foral de Pamplona de Navarra, of Navarre, is very beautiful. It's green and it's the same as Guipúzcoa. But by the time you reach Pamplona, the capital, you're starting to enter La Meseta. Not quite yet, but you already get a feeling for it. And Hemingway was attracted to this. And he was impressed with Los Sanfermines, with the bullfighting, the bull, the masculine part, the food, the people. Very, very different from France. Very masculine. And he fell in love with that because it was more in line with his personality and his temperament. You see, in France, La Francia is salsas para la carne. They have perfumes. They have todo es verde. Everything is lush green. And the women are very feminine. And the language Francais is muy feminine. It's very effeminate way of the pronunciation. And he came to Spain con el áspero castellano. And the women are not as feminine as the French women. They don't usually have all kinds of perfumes, and the food doesn't have all these sauces. And he fell in love with Spain because it's a 100% contrast with France. And so he came to Madrid. And he spent, I think, at least a year in Madrid during the 30s and during part of the Spanish Civil War. He sympathized with the Republican side during the war, and he was a correspondent in Madrid. After that, he went to Cuba and then to the United States. He's not my favorite author, by the way, but he was very good. He's a brilliant writer. Not my favorite. But there are a lot of interesting... Madrid as a province is very, very interesting. And the lowest... I was talking about the highest. You know, La Cebeda, or Somosierra, the village of Somosierra, is the highest in elevation in the province of Madrid. And one of the lowest is Aranjuez. You know, it's interesting about Aranjuez. If you look at the map, you see that the province of Madrid has a strange shape. And it is extended to the town of Aranjuez in order to incorporate Aranjuez into the province of Madrid, simply because it was the winter palace of the kings. Yes, Aranjuez in the garden, so it's in the province of Madrid. But as I said, Madrid is a very popular city, and I'm talking about it in 1980. What was happening in 1980? Well, Adolfo Suarez was still the Prime Minister of Spain. The following year, 1981, in February, an attempt was made to approve Leopoldo Calvo Sotelo as the replacement of Suarez. Suarez was stepping down. To step down is dimitir, to resign or to step down. And so in the parliament on the 23rd of February, 1981, they had a vote to formally approve Leopoldo Calvo Sotelo as the new prime minister of Spain. And that was the famous moment when Antonio Tejero, I think his name's Antonio, entered the parliament, and we had the attempt to overthrow the government. That was a failure, and that was the 23rd of February. It's interesting that was 1981, February 1981. I remember it very well. It was very, very strange because I drove home from Getafe, from John Deere, on that day, and I got home around 6:30 in Virgen del Val Street in Barrio de la Concepción, and I sat down at the table in the dining room with my wife, and there was a radio nearby, and I turned on the radio. For the first time in my life, first time in my life in Spain, I turned on the radio and put it on the table to listen to the news or to listen to music. And I turned on the radio to Radio Nacional, and I noticed there was military music, but I didn't pay any attention because I thought it was una cuña radiofónica, un anuncio, or something. I thought it was an ad or something, an advertisement, military music. And I was talking to my wife, and 7 o'clock, we reached 7 o'clock, and I looked at the radio, and it was still playing military music, and it was about 3 or 4 minutes past seven. And I thought it was strange. I said, hey, you know, Radio Nacional, they didn't put on the news, and they're playing military music. And as a joke, I said to my wife, wow, habrá habido un golpe de Estado. I said, surely, there's probably been a coup d'etat. We use the French word, coup d'etat. We use the French expression in English, coup d'etat. And it was a joke, and so I was joking. But it turns out that I was right. And so when the military music continued, I finally began to turn the dial of the radio to find other stations. And there were a few stations that were still broadcasting and that were starting to say, something strange is happening in the Spanish Parliament, in the Congreso de Diputados, in the Spanish Parliament. And so it was clear. And so from that point on, I started listening carefully, of course, because I realized that my joke or supposition was exactly right. It was an attempt to overthrow. An attempt, intento de derrocar. Attempt to overthrow. Throw is arrojar, lanzar al aire. Sin embargo, overthrow, todo juntos, es derrocar. Un gobierno en este caso. To overthrow the government. An attempt. An intento, tentativa. An attempt to overthrow the government. And that was in February 1981. And that's where I will leave my program today, in 1981, when 3 days later, Leopoldo Cabo Sotelo was voted into the parliament, in the parliament, as the new prime minister. And that's where I'll leave it for next week. And we'll continue talking about Madrid, the province of Madrid, about my life, about everything. It's been a real pleasure. Thank you for staying with me this time, and I'll be back next week.